Welcome to the MediaCat Magazine podcast. Thank you for tuning in for the next in our series, Rebel with a Cause, with me, Opal Turner. For this series, we are talking about the relationship between creativity and strategy, or in other words, art, science, and logic. It is my pet theory that strategy and planning can be a creative secret weapon and that we overly separate the disciplines in our industry. So today, we are talking to the innovative, the insightful, the incredible Isabel Bale, the Strategy Director of Europe at M&C Saatchi World Services. Welcome, Isabel.
Hi, nice to be speaking to you.
We're so happy to have you today. And before we jump straight into the questions, I'm just going to let all our listeners know, we're going to be talking a bunch today about Isabel's recent paper for the IPA Diploma. Brilliant, brilliant piece of work titled, I Believe We Must Embrace the Non-Binary World or Be Forever Doomed to Certainty, which is just... Doomed to Certainty is just lives in my mind rent-free. So relevant to the pod for obvious reasons, but also super relevant to this month's theme at MediaCat Mag, which is creation and destruction. So with that context, let's jump right on in. So before we get into the delicious depths of non-binary thinking, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Isabel, and what led you to the IPA course and this topic?
Sure. So when I started the IPA diploma, I was working for a company, an agency called Drum, as the head of creative innovation. And I sat somewhere between creative and strategist. And my role was really about finding new ways to get messages into cultural spaces. So during the time I was there, the agency produced a Dua Lipa music video. We did an Emmy award-winning documentary. And we did everything from a social post to a Santa's grotto at one point. And the IPA course is all about pushing your thinking, pushing the thinking of the industry. And so... I'm eternally grateful that Drum put me forward, but it felt like a natural opportunity. And I think I, throughout my career, I've had a bit of a, I think I've got a bit of a reputation for the phrase, it's more complicated than that. Because actually I'm very bad at giving an immediate answer because it's more complicated than that usually. And so the IPA thinking has been a really great opportunity to get into the it's more complicated. I've always feel that marketing has a real problem with, we want to be box tickers rather than psychologists. And it's a lot easier to do that, but it's a lot more stressful and doesn't get you the results. And my personal life, I'm pansexual, I'm a trans woman. The idea of binaries don't really feature that much in my personal world. So why would they feature in my professional world? So that's sort of how I got into the topic. But to be honest, it's so far reaching. I feel like I probably should have picked something a little bit smaller because I think I could have written a book.
If you could write a book, I'd really appreciate it. It starts becoming like this major philosophical... It could be a philosophical thesis at this point, I'm sure, because the implications for the world and human psychology are actually ginormous. So, you know, not setting yourself too big a issue or anything, just, you know, aiming low. But it's interesting, actually, that you say that you've got a bit of a reputation for complexity, basically. Admitting complexity, like people, I do think there is a bit of a stereotype for good strategy to be effortlessly simple, and humans aren't. It's I like that you've always maintained that kind of rebellion against that.
There's something that sort of really came out when I was doing a lot of this research was that we know that sometimes the outcome has to be simple, but the process to get there doesn't. And I think sometimes we confuse simplicity of outcome with simplicity of process. And you can be all over the place crazy and have fun with the way you get there. The idea of sort of particularly when we get into the tools that we use in certainly in a planning space, and the need for everything to be driven by process, I think can really sometimes limit what you're doing. Still get, as long as you get to the output, that's all that matters.
Yeah, who cares how you get there? Just get there. It's fine. But it's fun actually, because I've seen kind of a little pattern arising, that it's not just rebels, but kind of misfits, if I can use the word, aka which to me means rebels by the necessity of identity, is somehow accidentally, maybe not so accidental, everyone I got on the podcast, but it's people who want to change things because the norms aren't made for them. And can you tell us a little bit why, because I know you touched on this in the paper, about why as human beings we are so prone to binary thinking, and why you're so keen to destroy it?
Well, I'll prove the rebel part straight away. I'm not keen to destroy binary thinking, because I think creation and destruction is too binary. I think it's about understanding that binary thinking can be used brilliantly in certain problems, and it can be used really well in the way that it actually evolved to be, which is that if I'm in a forest as an early human, I don't have the time and the luxury to sit there and work out every little detail of my environment. We're myopic. We have to focus on the importance sometimes. And the people that had the ability to focus on a binary of threat and not threat tended to survive a lot more than the people who sat there and debated the nuance. And so it's an evolutionary element that we have, and it's then doubled down on in the modern world by the fact that we are, our foundations really, I think, of modern society in general are digital. They are binary. They're ones and zeros, and so everything has to fit that process, the logic gates of transistors. And then if information doesn't fit what a computer needs, it's either ignored or it's forced to fit. And I think both of those are terrible, and both of those don't get you to where you want to get to. But we're really looking at the sort of the path of least resistance when it comes to binary thinking sort of taking over a lot of the time. It's easier to think us and them than it is to say, well, I agree with this bit, not this bit. And actually, sometimes we're really similar, sometimes we're totally opposite. It's easier to just put a box that says other than it is to try and work out every other potential option in a survey. And a friend of mine once said, I feel awful every time I have to put other in ethnicity, because I'm ignored. And actually, it means that the data that's captured doesn't capture me. It captures something else, something other. And I think that's a really great example where binary thinking, or even non-spectrum thinking, should we call it, doesn't take on that nuance. So I think it's the path of least resistance. It's hardwired into our brains, but it doesn't have to be. And I think we can change those things. And that's some of the work I've been looking at.
That's so funny. So essentially, we're not talking creation and destruction, guys. We're talking evolution. You know, to my understanding of the diploma as well, part of the kind of purpose and the mission is to help keep the industry evolving and moving forward. And part of that is to accept when some things don't work. And so I'm interested, what do you think from your experiences and whilst you've been working in the industry, but also specifically working on this paper, I imagine you've been picking up around you a lot kind of just those binary practices that are very prevalent in the industry and in Adland in general. So what have you noticed? I'm keen to see what you've observed.
Oh god, where do you start? I think we're absolutely chock full of binary thinking. Everything we do is so binary, and I think it's binary because of the speed of we've created for ourselves. At the top of the sort of structure, our audience definitions are so binary. If I see a brief that starts age, gender, and then goes into other stuff, I know it's a crap brief, because clearly the person hasn't understood the audience. They've just gone for the binary options. And I think that holds true in so many different ways, but the way we look at our relationships with professional relationships, particularly with our clients, if you're in an agency, and particularly with your agencies, if you're a client, is hierarchical. It's sort of often this idea that the client is always right. Sometimes they're not, and sometimes it's more complicated. And actually, it creates a real problem of us delivering work that is going to the wrong brief, because there was no other option. It was just the binary yes, no of, does it fit what the client's asked for? If not, it's wrong. I think we struggle a lot with our professional relationships with each other, in the sense of, well, I might be really good at one thing as a senior person in the team. I might be terrible at another thing. So why am I in charge? The idea that there should only be employer and employee, that there should be, going beyond that into technology, that there should be human and machine. Let things go where they need to be to answer the problem, rather than just to follow the rules. And I think, I could go on so many different ways. I think one of the interesting things for me is, someone asked me recently, if binaries really mattered in advertising, or if it was a bigger problem. And actually, advertising, it's just our little world. We don't really need to worry about it. But we create culture. We influence society and culture. And there was, I don't know if you heard it, there was an episode on Revisionist History where Malcolm Gladwell looked at Will and Grace, the sort of the show in the 90s, and pointed out that actually you could have made that really binary. You could have made, you could have had an episode that talked about AIDS. You could have absolutely made Will an authentic version of who that character should be. But that binary wasn't going to change any minds. And actually acknowledging that things were more complicated, that you were going to have to find ways of building something that did a job, was, as it's called out in that episode, arguably one of the main reasons that the US saw such a shift on gay marriage. And I think we forget how important our work is in those spaces, not necessarily in that it's going to sell a different colored car or a different color washing up liquid, but actually the impact it will have on the people that see it. And the question asked recently where someone said, no one's ever going to start a war over this, are they? But I think if you want to be slightly facetious about it, people are going to start a war over Marmite, love it or hate it, a lot quicker than they'll start a war over just do it. And I think anything that creates those divisions, reinforces those divisions, the work is full of stuff like that for us. And I could get really into sort of the way we use binaries in our work. Because I don't think they're always bad. I think they can be used really cleverly as ways to use copy and imagery and things like that. But if we are looking at binaries, all binaries do is reinforce themselves. Spectrums change minds, and we're in the business of changing minds.
We are in the business of changing minds. I'm going to put you on the spot, so tell me if you don't have this just living on the top of your head, but you mentioned there's some examples you know where you think binaries do work in advertising. Is there any off the top of your head that you could
I've got a great one. And I think non-binary, can I give you an example that I think is a campaign that is a really good example of binary thinking and non-binary thinking at the same time?
Oh, yes.
In not necessarily a positive way. So the Brexit campaign, the Leave vote was fantastic at making things tribal, but using binaries to create that. Well, either we have everything or we have nothing. Well, I want something, so everything's better than nothing. And it forced people into those spaces, knowing that they were forcing people to a binary where they were going to have the majority. But the non-binary bit of that campaign is more interesting for me, because they had right-wing investment bankers and far-left-wing animal rights activists voting the same way, because they didn't decide that Brexit was going to be this unchangeable thing, that it was this and nothing else. They allowed it to be a spectrum and allowed it to be fluid. And so it was, the EU is bad because they are supporting Spanish farmers bringing bulls to the ring if you're an animal rights activist. They were, the EU is bad because it's limiting regulation on how you're going to get your bonus if you're an investment banker. They never spoke to each other. So it didn't matter that it wasn't kind of in that space. So the non-binary example of that, I think, is really interesting. So is the binary. I think if your job is to create something for people to stand behind in simplistic terms, and I'm ignoring all of the cultural considerations and the dangers of that, but binary, you are with us or you're against us, is so powerful. And we see it in so many dangerous ways in society. And it's used to great effect in those places. Anywhere from football stadiums to voting booths, you name it. It's easier to say boomer versus millennial, despite both boomers and millennials being significantly older than anyone making memes. But it's sort of, all of them are just about, you can use a binary to divide. And you can use a binary to create zealous kind of believers in something, because you're creating that false sense of certainty. And certainty is so attractive.
Well, isn't it? Especially when you realise you are but a tiny lump of cells on a rock in the universe. So to that point, do you think, I don't know if this is an obvious or not question, do you think that binaries are inherently more prone to being used dangerously than like spectral thinking?
I'm going to get slightly on my high horse here, and I'm going to misattribute quotes as well, because it's been used so many times. But the idea that if you were to look at the world and just consume the data and just try and understand it, that stays the same. And there is sort of the idea, and I don't want to get too philosophical about the idea of sort of knowledge being absolute or anything like that, but binaries are so off. Binaries miss the detail, and binaries create a false sense of absolutism. And often, if you just took all the football teams out of existence, all the religions out of existence, all of the political parties out of existence, and you built them again from scratch, the same people are cheering for different teams, voting for different parties, and worshipping different gods, because they've been created around binaries, us and them. If you look at spectrums, there's no need to pick a team. There's no need to pick a space, no need to pick a party. You're looking at things and saying, well, this is the situation. It's complicated, but I'm going to try and understand it. I'm going to try and become clearer in my understanding of it rather than just defining, yeah, I'm certain about this. Move on, next question. Like I think that's the key for me, is that spectrums innately require curiosity, because you can't be certain. And if you're certain, you don't need curiosity, you don't need creativity, because you know the answer. I mean, I can't imagine a more boring space to be than right. And you're done. And that's the end of the discussion. You're right. Well, that's not how the world works. I don't think I've ever been right. I want to learn. I want to understand. And I think that's, going back to sort of our industry, a creative, a strategist, at the heart of what you do is curiosity. And binaries kill curiosity. Once it's ones and zeros, it can only be ones and zeros. Where's the messy, blurry stuff? That's the interesting bit.
Yeah, 100%. And it's fun. Like, it does get so philosophical and gigantic so quickly, because I realized after I asked the question, I'm asking you to put your opinion of non-binary thinking in a binary manner. So it could go on for a very long time. But it's one of the things that I'm slightly obsessed with talking about at the moment, partly because the world, and I got so psyched out reading in your paper, is cognitive dissonance. Mm. Because everything we just said, so true, but also so difficult. So can you just kind of share your point of view? I mean, actually, for the listeners, can you explain what cognitive dissonance is, and then just share your point of view on that in the creative industries? I'm really interested to know more about what you think on that.
Absolutely. So cognitive dissonance is the stress of dealing with conflicting information. So it's sort of that idea of living in a paradoxical space where everything can't be right. And I see it as very similar to gender dysphoria, when sort of you're living in this space that doesn't make sense. It's sort of the information you have doesn't add up. And for our industry, all of the binaries that we talked about before create this cognitive dissonance for us. We pretend that all results are brilliant. We pretend that we care about products that we don't care about. We pretend that we care about projects we don't care about. We go into meetings, if it's the Samsung client and everybody's got a Samsung phone and no one's got an iPhone, we lie. Because because we have to lie, because we've told the client that they live in this magical world where this is the case. And the classic one for me, which is treat it like a pitch, which we absolutely know means leave reality at the door. And so you're working on something where you're thinking, well, we can't do this idea, but I've been told to treat it like a pitch, so I'm going to go ahead with it anyway, knowing that in 2 days' time, someone in production could be asked to cost it up, and they know that they can't do it. But we're too far into this now, so the lie has to be maintained, and that's true across the board. I think I use the example in the essay about imagining that you're the social media manager at Shell, and you're putting out your incredibly dull corporate quote about how you've just opened a wind farm in the North Sea. Within seconds, people are calling you a liar. People are calling you out for greenwashing. There was one that said something along the lines of, how does it feel to be a person sitting in a room thinking up clever ways to mislead people? How does that feel on a daily basis to be that person? You know that you are lying. You know that that is a company that fundamentally is impacting global warming. But it's your job to sit there and put out the pointless message. And you can't turn to your boss or to the people on social media and say, I know I'm lying. I'm just trying to distract you. I don't care. I'm just taking my salary. Please let me go. Life's too difficult. So you don't, you just double down on it, and you double down. And it's no wonder that we have extraordinary high rates of anxiety in our industry, because we are forcing people into cognitive dissonance consistently. And the stress that puts people under, I particularly think when you are in a space where actually, I was going to say particularly strategists and creatives, but I really don't think that's true. I think particularly actually accounts people who are living that permanent space of a strategist or a creative saying to you inside the sort of the room, it's all bullshit, isn't it? Why are we doing this? Going to a client and saying they're really happy with the brief, it's so excited, and oh, so stressful. And I think that for me is the core of this, is that binaries create cognitive dissonance, because binaries can never actively show you the truth. They can never be that full representation of a spectrum. And I think, it's such a shame, because it is having a direct physical and mental impact on people in our industry. And we talk, I always think it's funny when we, it seems to happen sort of about once every year that a brand comes out and talks about we should do a hashtag selfless selfies, or we're going to be honest, hashtag no filter. So we're going to try and all of this stuff around, oh, isn't social media bad for you? Well, we live in that social media bubble as a profession. Yeah. And I think it's a real challenge is, or even in fact, actually going on another bit of cognitive dissonance.
We fund it.
When you know a client is making the wrong decision, you know that they are making a decision because they're bad at their jobs. They don't have all the information. They don't care. They are making a political decision. And you then have to sit there and say, yeah, and I'm going to somehow magically make this all fit. That in my opinion, that is so familiar to trans and non-binary people, because that is your life. You are sitting there trying to make things that don't fit fit. And it creates, in trans and non-binary people, huge amounts of anxiety, absurdly over the average levels of depression, suicide, etc. It's not because they're trans and non-binary. It's because a binary system has been built that doesn't work and creates that cognitive dissonance. And we do the same in the industry.
Yeah, we just do it throughout the world and then expect ourselves to be able to deal with it. And it's like, it's just shocking. Our brains don't work that way. But it is, I totally feel that, like from my own experience, not the same, but being someone with an invisible disability, I think how people see me is always a cognitive dissonance, because they're like, but you seem fine. And I'm like, yeah, I am, but also I'm in a lot of pain and I could go to sleep for 12 hours. And they're like, but how is that true? And also you're talking to me right now and you like aren't crying. And I'm like, well, both things can be true. And it's just, it's so hard to get people to understand multiple truths and hold multiple truths.
I think that's the key thing for me is, if you can't answer a question, if you're not happy with the answer to a question being both or neither, you're not really asking the question. You just want a comforting answer. Because if I say it's both or it's neither, I've not helped you tick the box. And I think your point around invisible disabilities is so important, because again, it's, well, I have a box for you. If you don't fit that box, I'm sorry, I can't deal with that. So no, not interested. And it's fascinating. I think it's always as, and then it's always as well. And I think this is why, and you mentioned earlier, sort of rebel by necessity. If you are not a straight, cis, white man, able-bodied, kind of middle or upper class, Western, I could list forever. Chances are the system was not built for you. More often than not, you are going to be in the space where you are the person mm-hmm. that has to say, well, it's more complicated than that. And with it's more complicated with that comes the risk of sticking your head out. And I think that's a real challenge. And I understand, and I am so, and this, I'm going to use the wrong word here because it's going to sound really, it's going to sound slightly harsh, but I am a little bit egotistical, but I feel like so forgiving for people who screw this up and who want binaries, because it's really tough to say, okay, all right, I had my checklist for today. I'm going to screw it up, write a new one, because apparently I got it wrong. That's tough. And I get that. And especially if you've got a deadline in 20 minutes, you just want yes or no. You don't want neither or both, because neither or both is not going to help. And I get that. And it's difficult, but it's also wrong.
Yeah. It's like we can have empathy, again, non-binary. We can have empathy for that and also understand that that's not the best way of working at the same time. It's funny how we keep coming back to time, though, is that pressure that keeps forcing us into those binaries.
It does go back to the original point around evolution. The binary thinking is fast thinking, and is our default mode for fast thinking.
Like reflex thinking.
Yeah, that's a great. Yeah, I love that reflex thinking. That's great. That I really like reflex thinking.
Thank you. Got it.
There's a model that the U.S. Air Force use for fighter pilots making decisions called, I'm not sure if it's OODA or OODA, but I like to call it OODA loops. OODA loops, which is observe, orientate, decide, act. And it's meant to be a way of making incredibly fast decisions. But the step that's in there that's interesting to me is orientate. And what they mean by that is understand the environment that you're making your decision in. Look at the factors that impact it. Everything from the culture of the person in the other plane. How are they making decisions because of the way that they are approaching things? The real nuance of stuff. And do that quickly rather than say, okay, it's look, decide, act, or look, act. It's take that step. And if fighter pilots can do it, then a marketing manager can do it.
Well, yeah. And also, like, especially for marketing and, you know, as we say, making culture, context is everything.
Absolutely. And we have got time. If you take things like, if you take groundbreaking campaign, or not even groundbreaking, campaigns that had fundamental change on society, no one sat there panicking at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday saying, if we don't get this over to the client today, the whole thing's going to... No, it's not. If it's out a day later, it's okay. And I think that false... And this is another binary, actually. And it's that idea of creating false deadlines because, okay, I need to get it out by this date. Why? I just do. This is the date. This is the box to be ticked. And if you understand, well, I need to do that because the client's got a boss that absolutely only engages with things on a Tuesday at 11. And if we miss that, then they're then on holiday for a month and off on maternity leave and we're not going to see him for a year. Okay, I can understand that. But then the question becomes, well, how do we change the decision-making process in the organization? Not, okay, let's throw a year's work of work out the window and rush to do a Tuesday.
Yeah, 100%. It kind of goes into, I mean, I'm thinking a little bit back to our last episode was with lovely Kenyatta Nelson. He was talking a lot about leadership. And it's just occurred to me that really understanding and that non-binary thinking and that holding both and neither to be true must really impact leading teams and you know, making the most out of the people that you have around you, because you have to be able to understand from an emotional perspective, which are of course not at all binary. And that, for some reason, we're okay with understanding. We understand there's multiple different emotions, but you're still having a good day or a bad day. There's no in between.
But don't you find it interesting that the way that our industry approached emotion was that we had to be shown as soon as we're in when we got to a digital space. I think prior to that, you had a lot more sort of a lot less binary thinking in the way that advertising was done. But if you in a digital world, it took us people physically showing us that emotional campaigns were better than rational ones before we realized that we should probably do them. Our first reaction was to say, okay, well, so I found a psychologist that told me there are 6 human emotions and we can't really measure those, but we can measure facial expressions. So let's measure a bunch of facial expressions. And there's no, well, actually they mean different things to different people around the planet. There's no, well, sometimes I don't really react about how I feel. Sometimes in the moment, my reaction isn't the same as my long-term reaction.
Some people are autistic and don't show their facial expression.
Yeah, absolutely. And we lose all this stuff because we just want to make it fit ones and zeros. And we take the complex and we try and make it something that a computer can understand. And I can't wait. And I'm going to show my technological ineptness now, but I can't wait for a world where we are looking at logical computing in terms of, not logical computing, single process computing and quantum computing working together. Because if you look at how incredible the rise of AI has been over the last 15 years, I genuinely think one of our biggest holding, the biggest facts holding us back at the moment is the fact that everything has to be put into ones and zeros. And quantum computing, and again, apologies to anyone who actually knows what they're talking about. It's about embracing the both and neither. It's about not knowing. It's about not being certain, but understanding, like a clear understanding of the system. And that's so cool. And I really hope that it is just a technological limitation, because that gives me hope that we can break out of it.
Oh my God, yeah, that's such a great point. I had not kind of thought about those implications of quantum computing. By the way, if there is anyone listening who does quantum computing, please let me know. I would love to talk to you, because I have no idea. But I think it's just incredible, because, you know, essentially the idea is that quantum computing would have the same complexity that our brains have, and our brains aren't binary. So it's the possibility, as you say, for a world where computers are actually more like us, as opposed to a binary version of what a certain amount of people have told them. So I'm interested, just bringing it back down to you, from quantum to you. How do you think that the binary practices of our society, and we've kind of touched on that already, but also in our industry, have affected your personal career journey? Because I'm wondering, it sounds like you had a great position not so long ago where you were in between creative and strategy, but have you felt forced into a binary from a career perspective?
Well, I got into marketing sort of by the back door a bit. My first sort of grown-up job was as a recruitment consultant, and I wasn't particularly good at it, but I realized quite quickly that the jobs that I was selling other people sounded more interesting than the one I had. So I went for an interview at Mediacom as a paid search executive. And my first interview was literally a conversation about World of Warcraft, and then great, we'll see you for a second interview. So I didn't really understand much about media at the time, but I never really looked at it as I want to be a creative, I want to be a strategist. I just looked at, well, this is the bit I'm doing right now. What bits do I like? What bits don't I? And so you do a bit of a zigzaggy upward trajectory rather than a straight line. And so I did paid search to SEO, to social media, to content, to digital strategy, to global content strategy, to innovation, all over the place, because I just wanted to learn and I wanted to solve problems. And
it was your curiosity.
Yeah. And I hope that in 10 years' time, I'm doing something that I don't even know exists at the moment. And so I've never felt the need to say, okay, I'm a creative or a strategist. I'm just going to go into the room that I've been asked to go into and answer the problem. And I'm gonna leave it more well-informed than I entered it. And I think at the end of the day, I don't care at all about the commercial sector of our industry. I never have. I've worked in it a lot, but I don't care about it. So there is a professional pride about doing your job well. But really what I get out of it is learning, is understanding, is enjoying solving problems. And I think this is the first job title I've ever had in my career that has just said strategy director or strategy anything. There's always been a bit of something or made up some glorified title. So I don't think you have to be one or the other. I think solve problems, be curious, look at the world and do the job that you enjoy doing, not the job that's on the job spec. Because eventually, if you're good at it, people will just let you do that one anyway.
Brilliant piece of advice. I was just reading a book called Darling, You Can Do Both, which is a fantastic read. I thoroughly recommend it to literally everyone. But they made the great analogy of their careers being more like lily pads, jumping from lily pad to lily pad. And sometimes it was a bigger lily pad and sometimes it's a smaller lily pad. But you go where you need to go at that point in time. What makes sense for you at that point of time? And I feel like a lot of us would put a lot less pressure on ourselves if we could learn to look at it in that less binary way.
Yeah, I think find places with the least amount of cognitive dissonance you can find. Find places where you feel comfortable at home and able to explore. And beyond, and I'm very privileged to be able to say that, because I'm not saying financially secure. I'm not saying kind of all the other factors in there. So I am very grateful to be able to say that. If you are lucky enough and privileged enough to be able to make those calls, then I think that's what matters. And if we are, again, with a huge caveat of the privilege that this comes with, find the things that you are happy about doing in our industry, because we are all, as a whole, very, very privileged to have the jobs we have when the alternatives are out there.
We're not saving lives. No one's going to die. It's going to be okay. Let's not make these false deadlines for ourselves. But I'm interested, I'm thinking about creation. I'm thinking about the possibilities. What kind of work, you know, in your hopes and dreams, when you think of a world where we let go of these binaries, in our industry, in society, etc., what kind of work are we making?
Set me
an image.
I think more honest work, more impactful, more relevant to our audiences. I think we we probably all breathe a collective sigh of relief, because we can get into it and really and know that we've not set ourselves an impossible task. I don't think that is an ethical or moral high ground, because I think the Brexit work, which I would personally disagree with, is a great example. I think the way they looked at their targeting of non-binary work. But I think it's about reveling in the complexity of human experience. And if you look at, I think a really great example of it recently, or not that recent these days, was the Womb Stories by Bodyform. Because that required not just a client willing to say, okay, this is quite complicated, but a strategist willing to defend it, and a creative willing to really push it through into to genuinely, I think, like, incredible ways. And there's so many brilliant bits in that work, but one of the things for me that I thought was fantastic was acknowledging that for some people, getting their period is a moment of relief, and actually that's never shown. It's always a bad thing. And so suddenly you're acknowledging something that is, again, creating that cognitive dissonance. The idea of in talking about trans men, of endometriosis, of so many challenges, that if you'd have said, we're going to do a 60-90-30, and can you not, like, do any of the difficult bits, because we need to keep it really simple. And so we've looked at the data, and actually 51% of our audience fit this profile. So can you ignore the other 49? Because we need to go with the majority. That's how we're going to do our Byron Sharp greatest number. And, well, then you lose all of that nuance. And the work is so much better for the nuance. So I think it changes. I believe it changes the conversation. Because it allows people to say, oh, okay, well, if they're talking about it, then I can talk about it. And I can start to just normalize the complexity, and then it's not complex anymore. I do believe a lot of the things that we see as too complicated are only complicated because we've decided that they're complicated. We deal with incredibly complex things in our brains all the time, and we just accept it. I'm trying to think of a good example, but the idea of sort of looking at, let's get back to social media, actually, because I think that's quite an interesting one. Or no, not even social media. The way I choose to dress in the morning, I understand the cultural significance of everything I put on. I understand the way I hold myself, or the way I walk. I understand human reactions and conversations, the choices of vocabulary. That's all really complicated stuff, but we don't say, oh, it's really complicated, kind of easy go ug, need go downstairs. Like, we embrace it. And I think we can do the same with so many other things. We just need to accept it as, yeah, it's complicated. Let's enjoy it. Let's revel in it. Let's not need to be certain.
It's so funny that we are talking about the Womb Stories piece, because at Ranking Creative, we recently did a series and we interviewed Tanya Grubner from Essity, who's the client on that work. And I'm literally just working on an article version of that piece of content today. And I was reading, she was talking about the process of how they got to Womb Stories. And she was like, we just asked questions differently. We just said, What would your womb be if it was a person? What would your womb be if it was a smell? What would your womb be? And that's all people needed to free them of the binary thinking of it's an organ, and take them into this creative space that allowed it to be easily, in my mind, one of the best pieces of work ever created, because I certainly felt seen by it. It's one of the only ads I've ever talked about that I've had nothing to do with, that I've talked about with like every single member of my family and friends.
I think, and it really does pay off. You gain a better understanding of things. You can make better informed decisions. And I think the key part for me, and the essay itself goes into lots of the practical bits about how we can change things and all that. But the big takeaway for me is that you can see the world as a binary. It won't change the world. It will change your view of it. And I won't get into it now, but the science around how language does fundamentally change the way you perceive the world. If you change your language, if you open up your language, you see the world differently. And it's huge. And I think it's such a shame that whatever the topic, regardless of whether we are talking about shades of blue in a painting, or a personal identity, or the way you experience emotion, if you've just got on off, blue not blue, sort of all of it, that's so I feel like you're missing out, and I feel so sorry.
You're so sad.
Aren't engaging in it, and that's before you get into the cognitive dissonance side. But it's just purely from an expression of exploring the world, that the incredible, wonderful spectrum that we live in. Why stick yourself in a box?
Exactly. I mean, and everyone go and read the paper, obviously, to find out actionable tips on how to be less binary. Because there's some corkers in there, I tell you. But I'm going to resist going into them right now. So I'm going to low-key ask you some binary questions, don't judge me. But please answer them in completely non-binary spectral ways. But if, because I'm imagining the future that you're building, that we're building together in our industry. If you were destroying one specific binary practice in our industry overnight, what would you go for first?
The idea of the appeal to authority, that the client is always right, or, well, the shareholders want this, or someone not in the room has made an arbitrary decision that means that we have to shut down discussion. Because shareholders want long-term value. They're waiting for their pension to mature. They don't care about the quarterlies. They want long-term value. The CEO wants to make sure that the business is going in the right direction. Everybody does not want a crap outcome. If they're not in the room and you're blaming something that they're saying for short-termism, nah, don't buy it. The appeal to authority needs to go. Clients are not always right. The ECD is not the end goal on every single kind of creative decision. Most ECDs I know have absolutely not the foggiest about the inner workings of sort of TikTok trends. So why should they be the people making that call? Appeal to authority has to go. We've got to understand that the sort of the answer we take, the way we approach things, can't be this sort of handed down from on high. We've got to explore.
Especially at the rate that we're moving now, like culture's moving way too fast for your hierarchies, guys. Get rid. And so the opposite of this, if you were creating a new practice or a new norm in what we do overnight, what would you do? What would you go, if I could just add one thing?
So some people do this all the time and they're brilliant at it, but I would want to normalize this, which is I was told once that the minute you work on any brand, you lose the right to have an opinion about that brand in an objective way. Because you've seen how the sausage is made. You can't then have an opinion on it. So you have to go out there. I think all creators and strategists and everybody in our industry, go interact with your audience, go try the products, go experience the competitors. Don't just assume you know it, feel it. Like, be in that moment, be in those spaces, because that curiosity will help you learn, will help you create. And not to kind of go back on the sort of the taglines, but if you know what the answers are, then you don't need creativity, you don't need curiosity. You're certain. Well, you're certainly wrong. Yeah, and I think I've never seen a strategist or a creative come back from a focus group or from sitting in a McDonald's all afternoon just taking notes. I've never seen them come back and go, oh, total waste of time that. Because the interesting thing is that when it becomes a survey, it's gone through the computer. It has become data, and data is not a spectrum. Data by definition are these points that we've created, and you lose the spectrum.
You want to filter so it through that.
Go feel it rather than read it.
Lovely quote again from Kenyatta. I'm just obsessed with the pod I did with him, but he made this brilliant statement, was that no time spent with a human is time wasted.
I love that. Yeah, I think you it's on you if you feel you're wasting your time with another human being.
Exactly, you're coming at it wrong. It's really happening because
what could you learn that you decided you can't?
Exactly. It's all coming back to that curiosity. It's got to be what drives us. I love the idea that a successful project is when you've learned something from it. And it almost means when you finish a project and you feel like if you started again, you do something completely different, that's a success, which is the opposite of how we often think of success now.
That's fantastic. We are so, going back to the cognitive dissonance, going back to the binary of it either worked or it didn't, we're so attached to that that we can't even admit that we might, you know, sometimes we're not perfect, that it didn't do exactly what we thought, but we learned from it. No science gets extended if you just got the outcome you were looking for. You have to break things. You have to query them.
And the same with art.
Yeah, with anything. Like, and not in a destructive way, but in a, I can't learn limitations by staying within them. I have to find where they are, and I have to learn that, and I have to understand that nuance, because it'll help me next time. And I've learned and I've improved. Yeah. And that's all I want to hear. Not look at me, we got an award. Who cares? I want to learn. Oh, absolutely. One thing I'd love to add to award papers would be something from the peer-reviewed sort of scientific space, which is further research in this space should. You want to get credibility in public, and you want all of that that comes with it. You want to show off to the industry. Okay, cool. One of the prerequisites is that you need to tell me what you've learned, so we can all, rising tide rises all ships or whatever it is.
Yes. So final question, which I have to ask because it's the layout I've set for myself. My theory, and again, you don't have to agree or disagree, you can feel both. But my theory that creatives need strategy and can make better use of it, thoughts?
I think absolutely. I'd go further. I think that strategies need creativity. I think that all of us need the understanding of the problem set and the restrictions and elements like that that come from being in accounts and managing those spaces. And the reason we need each other is because we are going to get, this is an incredibly wanky statement, but it's something that I've sort of come to understand a bit as I get older. We should always be looking for the equivalent of cultural triangulation. Find someone else and find their point of view, because it will let you know what is not the way, it is your way. And you don't know what's your way until you find someone else doing it differently. If you just want to be really selfish about it, you'll learn something about yourself. If you have no interest in other people whatsoever, you're going to learn about yourself. And that will allow you to say, right, it wasn't the way, it wasn't certainty, it was my way. And now I know there are other ways. Now I can understand there's new approaches. So absolutely, as someone that's been both and experienced all of that space, I couldn't agree more. I think just because you want to see the world in my way is the way, doesn't mean the spectrum's disappeared. The binaries don't change that. You're only losing out if you're not embracing that spectrum. I think the one thing I think is most important about all of this is that we are willing, and I think this holds true so much in society at the moment, in the way that we see the things that are happening with sort of the gender recognition bill in Scotland. Investigate, look, understand, listen to other people, because you will learn from it. And when we get into a position where things are binary and people are good or evil, when decisions are right or wrong, no one gains. And I really hope as we sort of the next few years that people are willing to say, okay, there's a small group that doesn't fit the boxes that I've created. The boxes are wrong, not the people.
I simply could not put it better myself. So, any last thoughts before we leave our lovely, lovely listeners today?
So I think there's one thing we haven't discussed, which is almost the flip side to this Pandora's box that you can open of it's more complicated than that. And the embracing spectrums, which is, it's absolutely okay to not know and to feel comfortable not knowing. Because actually the whole purpose of not being certain is that you don't know, and you may never know. But you are looking to improve and to grow and to understand and to look for clarity. You're not there to search for certainty or to hit certainty. And that can feel really scary. And I think it's just being able to say, okay, yeah, this is complicated. I don't understand it, but I'm moving towards better understanding. And that's tough. And I think it can feel unnerving to say, all right, the safety measure I put in place hurts with cognitive dissonance, but it's a safety measure. And I just took it away. And I think that's really important to admit and to acknowledge that what we've talked about today isn't easy, and it isn't a panacea that solves all the ways you look at the world. It just gives you the freedom to feel that feeling and to understand that, and then to move forward.
And that is freeing. It's hard to get there, but it is so freeing. Even if you just do it in the tiniest way, be okay with holding multiple things to be true.
Everything is not always the way it is.
I simply could not put it better myself. So, on that note, thank you so much for your time today, Isabel. It's been a glorious learning situation. I encourage absolutely everyone to read the paper. It's fantastic. I can't wait to build a non-binary thinking industry with you.